board moment. We see you now. Be sure to have your traveler's checks.
Okay, so I'm gonna, yeah. All right, let's meet him.
No, man, we got to get a good deal. You know, get a good deal with him now.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, let's just see how we go, eh?
You can now go in and see the man. Pay your respects.
I think he's going to take our offer. What do you reckon? It's a good deal. It's a good deal on Spice Man.
Hey, man, no one talks about that to the Space Father. Come on.
You must make him a deal. He cannot refuse.
Power is on and the spices go. It's time for the Mullet Guild.
Secret report from the Guild. The mullet has the spice. The spice must flow. You must listen to the Mullet Guild.
Welcome to the Mullet Guild, a special look at Dune from Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet. Find all about the Dune universe here on this podcast. This podcast is for people that have never read Dune and are going into the movie in December 18 this year. Find out all about the world, the planet Arrakis, the different schools, the Swordmasters, the Mentats, the Bene Gesserit, and of course the Navigators. Find out about the medical Sook doctors. Find out about the Atreides, House Carino, and House Harkonnen, all here on Phantom Podcast Network's The Mullet Guild, hosted by The Lethal Mullet.
G'day guys, and welcome back to, of course, The Mullet Guild, live here from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia on, of course, Phantom Podcast Network. Here tonight to chat some Dune. That's, of course, the great novel written and, of course, constructed, created, and choreographed by Frank Herbert. Tonight we've got an interesting episode, and we're kind of going to spin this entire next 30 minutes on something that has been out there since, I think, the Empire magazine article, which came out recently. Just a two-page spread on Denis Villeneuve's Dune adaptation. And one of the things he said that really makes this one interesting is that he thought that, the characters in this very much like that of The Godfather. In particular, the role Paul Atreides plays is not that much of a hero, more a tragic figure in the lines of somebody like Michael Corleone. And so tonight's episode, we're just for fun going to be looking at Dune and The Godfather mashed together. We're going to look at the cast and just who in The Godfather could be in Dune. So just think about it. Just imagine Mario Puzo did the script for a Dune movie, and we had the exact cast of The Godfather. We're going to go through that now, and we're going to actually see who could be those characters here, of course, on The Mullet Guild. And of course, as Shai Hulud strikes and breaks the sands, we have to tell you how to find us out there on the sands of Arrakis. That's right, you can find me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You also catch me on Phantom Podcast Network's big chain of podcasts at fpnet.podbean.com or on the Podbean app. You can also catch us also on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and of course Google Play and Apple Podcasts. So go and check them out there. You can subscribe to the massive channel there. There's this show, obviously there's Culture Clash, and of course the amazing Blood of Kings, the biggest highlighter podcast out there, folks. Go and check it out. Another great franchise. Also, of course, Lethal Mullet Podcast, where you'll find me celebrating action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Everything from Stallone to Schwarzenegger to Van Damme, and of course, Shokasugi, to of course, Michael Dudikoff and more, all on the one show. You'll also find me on Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, which is a deep dive into the classic Star Trek genre. We're looking at everything from Deep Space Nine to Voyager, and recently to Enterprise as well, which is a much-loved show, which doesn't get enough love, I think, from the larger Star Trek fandom out there. Let's go and check that out. That is, of course, co-hosted by Mark Newbold, Fanta Tracker as well. You can also catch me at fantatracks.com for all 50 or so episodes of The Fantha from Down Under, my Star Wars podcast over there, specifically around Australian Star Wars fandom and much more. We're currently on hiatus on that show, but we will be back in the next month or so with a redo of the format. So it's going to be a lot more intense when it comes to Star Wars mythology, looking back at the Legends part of the fandom, because at this stage, we're going into a bit of a colder time, with the dark times, you might say, of Star Wars fandom, where there's not as much coming out. Obviously, we've got The Mandalorian soon, but we're going to celebrate some of the old on that show, and we've got some new twists on that show with some great trivia games and stuff like that on there too, and we're going to have regular co-hosts from the Fantha team on there too to spice things up on the Fantha from Down Under, so you can check that all on FanthaTracks.com. All right, folks, we're going to get into a bit of chat here on, of course, Dune and much more. One of the things that I've been really going through when it comes to Frank Herbert's writing, and particularly in the last couple of months, is really been going through some of the non-Dune material. Currently, I'm reading The White Plague, which is what he wrote around about 1983. And, of course, this is one that's set in modern times, and it's set basically in an environment where there's been an IRA bombing, which takes the life of a guy by the name of John O'Neill's family. And this guy just happens to be a very well-to-do scientist who knows how all the biological sort of warfare and stuff like that. And obviously he's somebody that knows how to basically work in the lines of making things that can be really deadly. It's prophetic because this is in a time of COVID. Reading something like this and what the revenge that he wreaks on the public at large, and of course, anyone connected to the IRA, is humongous. You know, it's huge. He basically puts out a virus, and a virus that only attacks women and children and not men. Obviously, this is his revenge to the world for taking his wife and children. And it's an interesting sort of journey because the character, obviously, John O'Neill, releases this, and we have a situation which is far worse. It's a more heightened version of what's happening in our real world right now. But Frank does it in such a real way that it's, you know, it really strikes home. I mean, this sort of thing is far more real than anything I think that Frank's put out there. I mean, as real as his stuff it gets, I suppose. But the tension in it, obviously, too, the role of John O'Neill when he's on the run, once he's done this disastrous event and it's spread throughout the world, you know, he goes back to visit areas that are affected, basically in hiding. And it's quite sickening, but also at the same time, you're inside the mind of this madman as well at the same time. So it's a very interesting novel. I've also picked up his post-Dune work in, Destination Void, which I'm currently going through the audiobook of as I mountain bike around the Gold Coast every morning for my exercise. And again, it's an interesting one too because it is quite a bit different from Dune, but it also leads into his books with Bill Ransom, and of course those were the Pandora sequence, starting, of course, with the Jesus incident, and we've got the Lazarus effect and the Ascension factor as well, which are all three I've read parts of before. I had a very old copy of the novels a few years ago, really tatty old paperbacks. But recently, through the great Amazon book services they've got currently too, I've got the Wordfire Press editions of those, which come in two books. You get Destination Void, and then you get a collected version of the three books. And got to say, my hat's off to Kevin J. Anderson on his Wordfire Press. It is a great publishing service. The books are top quality. The covers themselves have this really nice finish to them. It's hard to describe. It's sort of a soft velour sort of feel to them. Really beautiful. But again, yeah, it's going to be really good to get through those books. So I'm currently about three quarters of the way through The White Plague, and I will give a review of that on this show too, because we're going to showcase some of Frank's other stuff as well. It's all fantastic work. And we'll also be going into the Pandora sequence of that too later on this show too. Again, we've got to realize this guy is not only the writer of Dune, he's the writer of some fantastic stories outside of it too, and some really witty ones as well. Man of Two Worlds, he did with, of course, with Brian shortly before he passed, was a fantastic and, if not, comedic story in part two. It's really, really interesting story, which I'm going to share on this podcast in a future episode as well. And luckily, I have first editions of both White Plague and The Man of Two Worlds, and they're beautiful. They do share the Dune font on them as well, which is, I think, something that always carried on through other successive parts of course, of the book lines and stuff like that. Because at the end of the day, he is the father of Dune. Okay, in this rewind segment, this is a segment we're going to do every week, looking at a little bit of Dune trivia, whether it's to do with the movies, the books, the sci-fi series, or even some of the people that are involved in it. And this comes back to something that is quite interesting, but it's also something that I think that is kind of like the Kevin Bacon game that's out there in Hollywood, where you look at the many degrees or the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever it is, because he knows everybody and has done everything with every person in every film. But this is going to be the 7 degrees of Dune. And this one just happens to be about the Dune 1984 Lynch movie, because recently we covered a film on the 1984 Dune film, obviously having ties to a 1995 Dread movie. What is interesting about that Dread movie is this, is because two of the stars of that are also in Dune. And also has ties to the new one in the Denis Villeneuve 2020 Dune as well. So, to get started on that, we're going to chat about how it all connects. So, back in 1984, Dune, we had, of course, the character of Duke Leto Atreides. And he's such a renowned character. Obviously, he's a great leader. Such an, you know, great, huge part of that franchise. And we also have the character of Liet Kynes, who's the planetologist. And, of course, such a huge character in that. Obviously played by some very iconic actors. And guess who they were? All right, so they were, of course, Liet Kynes, played by Max von Sydow. Of course, Max von Sydow is such a huge presence when it came to acting. Of course, obviously in Conan the Barbarian, he plays the king, played Ming the Merciless, and he also played the bad guy in Never Say Never Again. Of course, that is the head of Spectre. I ain't going any higher. And of course, in that, we also have him starring in Judge Dredd. He plays one of the head justices and, of course, one of the mentors to Judge Dredd himself, and, of course, the biological father through the cloning process, of course. Now, the other one that's such a huge part of it is, of course, Duke Leto Atreides. Duke Leto Atreides is also a very famous actor as well, and one you wouldn't expect to be turning up later in this same movie as well, and that is Jurgen Prochnow, plays one of the other justices as well in Judge Dredd. So they're returning together in the same movie. Now, what also ties this to Dune is Diane Lane. Diane Lane in this obviously plays a role opposite Sylvester Stallone in this, and she was married to Gurney Halleck many years ago. That's right. Josh Brolin was married to Diane Lane, which ties Dune to Judge Dredd and then Judge Dredd to Dune the other way. So there you go. You have the 7 degrees of Dune, thanks to Judge Dredd. You're welcome. Do not waste that water, my friend. That water is life.
Perhaps you should go to the spice pub instead. Drown your sorrows in a spice beer. You'll thank me later.
You know, mate, it's not a bad idea. I might go and have myself a pint. Let's get hammered. All right, we're back. We're here in the spice pub drinking pale ales here today. That's right. Local pale ales here from the Gold Coast part of Arrakis. That's right. Gold Coast, great place, great beaches. And, well, we don't surf here. but what we do have is lots of info on Dune. And today we're going to be looking at, of course, The Godfather. thanks to an article, obviously, that had mentioned that Villeneuve kind of saw parts of Dune as The Godfather. So, interesting to see, just from the outset, just for fun, to look at The Godfather in the eyes of if you're doing a Dune adaptation. So, we're going to look at the cast, we're going to look at it compared to the cast of who you would put in place of, obviously, the characters in Dune. So, some of those we're going to be bringing up, of course, Marlon Brando, Al Pacino, James Caan, all those characters, and we're going to look at how they fit in place. So, if this was an adaptation in the, when did it come out? 1972, and of course, you know, this was, you know, a massive film itself from a massive book as well. So, it's again, another massive adaptation. But who would be who? Well, you can start off with, of course, Don Vito Corleone. Of course, well, Marlon Brando would obviously be playing the role of Duke Leto Atreides. Obviously, he is the head of the family, as this is, you know, like Dune, very much houses, or in this case, in, you know, La Cosa Nostra. It is all familiar, you know, they're all different families, different clans going against each other, and obviously in battle in both business and, well, business is war with those guys as well. Very similar to Dune in some ways, and very political when you think about it. Al Pacino, obviously, as Michael Corleone, would be, of course, Paul Atreides. You know, he is obviously the greenhorn. He's the youth has to learn all the different business of the family and go through to become the new head of the family. And it happens very quickly, just like in Dune. Obviously, Vito is killed, or in this case dies, and when he passes, it all is given straight to him. We have the characters, obviously, of Sonny Corleone. Sonny, you could kind of see as being, it's kind of a cross between, I think, Gurney Halleck, and in some ways, because I think maybe more Duncan Idaho, because he's a bit of a loner, but he's also one that's not afraid to take leadership. So very, very much in that. So James Caan in those roles. Well, you know, he'd be a fair hand with a sword, wouldn't he? Jimmy Caan. And he's done sci-fi before with Alien Nation, so let's not forget that one too. We also have Tom Hagen. That's, of course, the character played by Robert Duvall. And he's kind of, you know, the person that's, you know, he's part of the family, but not, you know, the physical family, I suppose, you know. He's one that's there as Vito's, you know, man in the corner, ready to exact out what needs to be done. And Robert Duvall playing a kind of a Thufa Hawat. Yeah, that's pretty much the role. You know, it's very much in that sort of mindset, I suppose you could say. And then we get to some of the bigger characters, obviously, down the lines as well. We've got characters like Fredo, played by the late John Cazale. He would be pretty much Dr. Yui, because, again, he is the traitor in the second film. Sorry for spoiling that if you haven't seen it, but it has been out since the 70s, so it's been a little while. But, again, he goes against the family, and it's very much in the same tradition of Dune. You know, obviously, Dune has traitors. You know, and they're on both sides. So it's interesting. There's bits and pieces of these characters here and there as well that really sort of fit that sort of tradition. Then we got characters like Johnny Fontaine. We got also Luca Brasi. All these characters which really fit into that sort of background area of the Mentat Assassin, or could really be, when you think about it, you know, part of, you know, I suppose very much like Peter De Vries. You know, these are people that are scheming in the backgrounds for their own end. It's very much in the way of course, of The Godfather. So there's also these other characters in The Godfather that are obviously in the lines of the Harkonnen as well. But here's where it gets interesting. Here's why I think Godfather is very close to Dune, is these characters aren't clear-cut. You know, they're not just good and bad characters. They're not just good and evil. You know, you got to think about the Corleone family themselves. They're dealing in, you know, crime. There is definitely an element of evil within that family itself. So there's no real you know, we're barracking for those people because that's the sort of story we're being told, obviously. We're seeing it through the eyes of, you know, the glamorization of, you know, a crime family. But what's the interesting with this is the crime dynasty is very, very similar to what's happening with House Atreides, how they've fallen into the trap in Arrakis. And when they go to Arrakis, they're going up against not just the Harkonnen, but obviously the Sardaukar, who were there pretty much the whole time. Or even, obviously, when the ambush finally takes place, once Duke is taken out and the Harkonnen come for them. Yeah, well, it's Sardaukar, but they're in a Harkonnen uniform. So it's a very formidable enemy given to them, of course, by the crown of the Carino family. Again, these are three families very similar to what we see about the midpoint of The Godfather. We see a number of the families coming together, and even Marlon Brando as Don Vito Corleone, after quite a few events have happened, you know, he's telling them, we're not going to get into this business. You know, we're pulling out. We're going to keep ourselves, you know, in a more, you know, obviously more legal business. They're not getting into the dirty arms of the drugs industry, which was coming in very much in the 1960s, obviously, after a lot of these events. And that's interesting. You know, we get to see that in this. And it also goes in line a little bit with what Paul Atreides is going through. Now, rewind back to when Paul Atreides, having his first few scenes, he's having his tests. So obviously his first big test is with Helen Gaius Mohim. You know, he sits down and, of course, he's got to put his hand in the box and go up against the Gomjabar. That is very much like what we're starting to see with the first couple of things that happen with, of course, Michael Corleone. Michael Corleone sees his father get attacked. Once he's attacked, he's put into a hospital. But then that hospital is under attack by, obviously, the other thugs. And what he has to do is get out there and be a hitman for his first time, look after his father, just be a made man, basically. And, of course, these are many of the stepping points into becoming the gangster that he will become. And, of course, the Godfather soon up after that too. So these are epics. They're dynasties and, of course, in many ways, very similar to, of course, the hero's journey. We're getting to see these characters grow through the many tests and things that they go through to make them the characters they are. I think with it being so similar to The Godfather in that way, just in the book alone, that was very clever of Denis Villeneuve to obviously see that. And yeah, Paul Atreides is not the hero of Dune. Is there a hero of Dune? Well, maybe. Is there a Kwisatz Haderach? Well, maybe. But again, we've got to really look at the fine point of what Paul's role really was. And of course, what Frank was trying to achieve with this story. Again, he was telling you to beware of charismatic leadership. And of course, all those that follow it blindly and don't ask questions. He always said, ask questions. You know, don't be afraid to. And of course, this is part of what leads us down these sorts of journeys to such tragic events in the world. And of course, this is a warning. June was a good warning to that. And I think very prevalent in what is happening today out there. Hi there, I'm Adam O'Brien, better known as, of course, The Lethal Mullet. And of course, I am part of the Phantom Podcast Network. It's a series of shows that really celebrate the fandom, and all fandoms are welcome. On the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com, subscribe so you can check out shows just like Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast, where Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel and Lee Fillingsness take us through the foundations, of course, of the great TV series Highlander, the movies, and of course, all of the franchise that entails, and the merchandise. Of course, there's also Culture Clash, the Phantom Podcast Network's weekly pop culture podcast. Join co-founders Kevin and, of course, Kyle Wagner as they go through everything from comic book movies to, of course, TV, movies and more. Catch also Couch Potato Theater, a cult classic and guilty pleasures movie podcast celebrating the movies that are hard to find, those that are fun and that we all remember from the old days. Also, we have Time Warp, a flashback series looking at certain years. Recently, they did 1984, also looking at all the movies that are in that year and celebrating them. We also have The End Zone, an unofficial NFL podcast looking at American football, and in particular with Kevin and Kyle, their teams, and how their performance is going. We also have Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where the hosts take us down the memory of the amazing Alfred Hitchcock and his amazing films that came out. We also have the Union Fed podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, which looks at everything in those franchises, looking at all the current Picard episodes, and of course, Star Trek Discovery, and of course, the new seasons of The Orville. Join the metalhead himself, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reisel, from the 1980s Hair Metal podcast. He may not have the hair, but he has the enthusiasm to look at everything when it comes to heavy metal. And also, over from London, we have the amazing Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast run by Dan Hadley and sometimes Kyle Wagner and friends, looking, of course, at Doctor Who. And as the Tom on there, folks, so definitely check it out. And you can check out my show, Lethal Mullet, 1980s action film podcast on there, celebrating all of the 1980s and more. Also, the brand new show, Star Wars, one called What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, which is hosted by, of course, Derek and Scott, and looking at everything Star Wars. And Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, Fantha Tracker himself, Mark Newbold. And now, the one you're listening to, of course, in the airwaves of Arrakis. That's right, on stereo, in your ornithopter, as you're collecting your spice from the sands and getting away before Shai Hulu greets you, is the one, the only, the Mullet Guild. Here, weekly, every Thursday, on the Phantom Podcast Network. Well, we figured Kev's always done the promo, so it's time for the Mullet to help out with his job. Okay, folks, so one of the other things we're going to talk about today is, of course, the Chris Knife. Now, we've talked about other items like the weirding modules in, of course, 1984 Dune, and what that meant for Dune, because it's not in the novels. But the Chris Knives, obviously, are a big part of not only the movies, obviously, they're a big part of the mythology, as well as the part of the Fremen themselves. It's a huge part of what the Fremen are. Now, the Chris Knives obviously is a bone knife, obviously made from the teeth of Shai Hulud. And these are very milky white-looking blades, which are very different in each of the adaptations of Dune. And obviously, Frank describes them in the book a certain way, and obviously the rest was up to whatever you can come up with. Now, there's some fans out there who have made some really interesting Chris Knives of their own, some being obviously ones that they've modelled off the films as well. And now even Dune's getting to the stage where we're getting cosplay out there too, which is fantastic. And it's great to see some other franchises, obviously Dune included, getting out there and really showing that it's not just Star Trek and Star Wars and Marvel out there that do good cosplays. I've seen out there some great still suits, some great... there was even, was this last year I saw somebody that was in a Spacing Guild outfit, which was modelled more off the David Lynch Dune. But again, a big part of it, if you're going to do a Fremen outfit, is obviously the Chris Knife. Now, part of it being Chris Knives, kind of a little bit like a katana with a samurai, is that once it's drawn, it must seek blood. Or it must be, blood must be shed, basically. The first cut must be made. And obviously, too, the other thing, too, is it needs to be stay warm close to a body. Otherwise, everything falls apart on the blade, and obviously it disintegrates. So it needs warmth. That's one of the reasons the Fremen obviously carry it on them at all times. So it's an interesting weapon. Again, it's, you know, long before the time of the lightsabers and stuff like that, it's an interesting part of it. Now, one of the things I've been looking at it in the mythology side of things with the Chris Knife is the way that it really opens Paul's person up, and obviously his reliance on things like shields before this and using the Kindle blades is just part of it. So obviously using when the fight we has with Gurney Halleck, and he's obviously trained with Duncan Idaho before this as well, obviously Chief Swordmaster, you know, you could really see that that is with shields. So obviously he's got that protection. He's really into that chess game of the fight. So obviously, you know, the slow blade penetrates the shield, the Holtzman shield. So he's sort of playing that game off and really going at it with the knives, and obviously, you know, it gets repelled by the energy shield. So part of that is he's very handy with a blade, but he's almost carefree with it at that stage because he knows he has the protection of a shield. Later, after his father passes away and he's out with his mother, Lady Jessica, and they get found by Stilgar, and he gets called out by Jaimus to have the fight. He doesn't have the protection of a shield. He doesn't have that sort of that layer there that was saving him. So his, you know, blade, like Gurney Halleck tells him, you know, he says, now fight for true. And he really has to. So there's part of something with that, the, when he gets his Kris knife in that scene, part of it is that, you know, it's a symbol of him to manhood, to taking that next step to being, you know, a bit more serious in life, if then, you know, taking on the struggles straight up. And I think that's what really is interesting to me about that sort of thing with the fight. It's a symbol. It's not just a weapon, even though it is just a weapon as well. You know, but it's also the symbol of the Fremen themselves too, which makes it even more interesting too. Highly sought after to get one of those knives, and obviously in the Dune universe that is too. So not a lot of people outside the Fremen have them, obviously, because the Fremen are such formidable warriors. But that's what it is to me. It's more a symbol of Paul's growing up. He's gone through the first couple of hurdles of being a hero and learning to be a leader. Part of that is you need to shed naivete. And I think that's what that scene's more about than anything. But, you know, what do you listeners out there think? Do you think that it's a symbol of that bridging part that he has to go through before he's trained as a Fremen? You know, he's sort of leaving behind the training that he's had by Duncan and Gurney and now taking on a bit more serious look at things, you know, a bit more deadly. He's a bit more quick to get to the kill so that he can get to the next point. You know, it's getting past that point that he has to kill too in that scene as he's first. So it is a very interesting point that Frank's making in that too, is that, again, you know, you're going to be faced with things that you really have to take seriously and just get done straight away, no mucking around, without thought. And I think that's what that is all about in that scene.
Get the spurs of the truck, then I'm gonna get that back to Arcade. Let's go, get that spurs of the truck. Come on, boys, let's go. Come on, before show, let's go, guys.
Oh, Duke Leto, if only life was like Caladan.
Tell me of the waters of your homeworld, Mullet.
Alright, that's everything we have for tonight. Here, of course, on the Mullet Guild. I hope you enjoyed it. And we got Scott Bowman coming back to talk a little bit about Dune computer games, role-playing games, and, of course, the CCG, the collectible card game, very, very soon. We're going to also go through, of course, the massive hit, the board game that came back from the late 70s. And, of course, it was really popular when the 84 film came out as well. It's got a reboot, and it's great. I played it many times. So we'll be chatting about that. We also have Master Swordsman himself, Lee Fillingsness of Blood of Kings, coming on to chat about swordplay. So he's not a Dune fan, folks. So it's going to be interesting to chat to him, teach him about Dune on the show. But also he's going to teach us all about how swords work, how they might work in the Dune universe, even with body shields. All here on the Mullet Guild. We'll see you then. So good afternoon, good evening, and good night. We'll see you next time.